back together again. You and I chatting it up Monday style, brand new week on November the 17th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I played two recent statements, audio cuts from Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, implying President Trump's alleged involvement with the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Murphy, go a little too far this time. CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes and former Time Magazine senior reporter Alan Sanders both checked in to give us their thoughts on an impending U.S. House vote to release those Epstein files. Finally, we checked in with Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill, all regarding U.S. military attacks on alleged drug-running boats in the Caribbean and the state's decision to apparently get into the hospital business.
I tell you, I will give Chris Murphy credit. He's honing his media skills and he knows his audience. All right? Now, again, I don't care whether it's somebody on the left or on the right. Say whatever you want to say. God bless you. It's the same thing I said in the middle of all this Jimmy Kimmel stuff from a few months ago when they thought silencing Jimmy Kimmel was like silencing Jesus Christ. I mean, you should have seen people going crazy. All right. So I think you get to say whatever you want. But just because you could say something doesn't mean you should. Now, you just heard that soundbite in Chris Williams' newscast. Here, I will play that. Now, again, Chris Murphy yesterday, and the reason I talk about, what he says so much is that he is one of two men, along with Mr. Blumenthal, representing the sovereign state of Connecticut in the most powerful deliberative body in the world. The U.S. Senate, 100 people, 100 men and women, pretty much split down the middle, slight edge to Republicans. So what he says matters. It does. And a lot of you I know would rather not watch the Sunday shows. It's Sunday. You'd rather watch anything else. You'd rather have a root canal without any Novocaine or gas or whatever noxious item to knock you out, then watch Chris Murphy, Rosa DeLauro, Jim Himes, Richard Blumenthal, Joe Courtney, Johanna Hayes, or John Larson on the Sunday show. I get you. That's fine. You're not like me. I live for this stuff. That's what I get paid for. But you like to turn your brain off. So again, Chris Murphy asked yesterday, let's play semi-good Chris Murphy and then the demon Chris Murphy when he's in front of a bunch of progressives. So this is how you say what you say when you realize that you're on a mass market channel like ABC on Sunday. And when asked about, hey, what do you think the Trump drive is in how he's handling the Epstein files? Senator, what do you think?
Donald Trump is trying to cover up for, I think, a host of really powerful and rich people, but he's frankly not that selfless. He wouldn't be going through all of this effort to try to stop the release of these files if he wasn't seriously implicated in those files.
Okay, so that's Chris Murphy, and Chris Murphy is you know what he has down to an artwork, to an art, I should say, not an artwork. He really, and I give him credit for this, he's honing his skills to make you think he knows what he's talking about. That's the mark of a real you-know-what artist who he's like Zohran Mamdani, the incoming mayor of New York. You listen to 15 or 20 seconds and you go, what? Huh? Like, Senator, with all due respect, you know this how.
Donald Trump is trying to cover up for, I think, a host of really powerful and rich people, but he's frankly not that selfless. He wouldn't be going through all of this effort to try to stop the release of these files if he wasn't seriously implicated in those files.
Okay, so seriously implicated. So he either knows this or he's guessing, which I guess is okay. I guess guessing is okay. All right, I got you. So you're probably saying, well, Paul, that's kind of vanilla, isn't it? Yeah, I guess. Now, a couple of days earlier, last week, there was a big to-do in Austin, Texas. And if you don't know, the greater Austin area is like the hive for any progressives who live in Texas. And yeah, there are a lot of Democrats and progressives in Texas. And the Texas Tribune Festival yearly, usually held in Austin, is a big gathering for them. So Chris Murphy was there, and he was asked, hey, by Sam Stein, who's a very prominent progressive journalist, hey, what's going on here, Senator, do you think, with Donald Trump and the Epstein files? So you heard him Sunday, mass market, major network, ABC. I know nobody watches the networks anymore. Yes, they do. Millions of people still watch the networks. So he let loose with a somewhat bombastic but very tuned into kind of phrase, which, again, he may be right. Well, wait till you say. Now, I want you to do a little compare and contrast here. We'll do that momentarily. So you heard Chris Murphy say, well, he's probably covering for people, the rich and the powerful. Okay, wait till you hear what he said, not on a national network, about Donald Trump. And he may be right. I don't know. But you ask yourself, uh-huh, he sounded like Mr. Statesman on the national network, and he says this in front of a bunch of progressives. And even for somebody like Chris Murphy, I said, what? And I had to go back and listen to it again and say, did he really end up saying what I thought I just heard him say? What did he say, Paul? We'll tell you coming up. First, though, we'll do this. Oh, don't go anywhere. You're going to want to hear this. It wasn't quite the statesman Chris Murphy last week in Austin. All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So again, this was Chris Murphy yesterday for a mass audience on ABC's This Week program.
Donald Trump is trying to cover up for, I think, a host of really powerful and rich people, but he's frankly not that selfless. He wouldn't be going through all of this effort to try to stop the release of these files if he wasn't seriously implicated in those files.
Okay, so two things there. Mr. Trump, according to Mr. Murphy, is covering up for friends, and he may be implicated. Okay, all right, and that was eloquently stated. Here's Chris Murphy a couple of days ago last week in front of a bunch of progressives at the Texas Tribune Festival last week in Austin.
Clearly, Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring. That is heartbreaking.
What? Hold on a second. Wait a minute here. Whoa, timeout, white team. Wait a second. What? Wait a minute. You didn't quite say that on Sunday, Senator, did you? On a mass market, millions and millions of viewer type program on ABC, you said this in front of a bunch of panting liberals.
Clearly, Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring. That is heartbreaking.
Wait a minute. Donald Trump was at. Look. Either he knows something here, and I'm glad he said it, or he's just making SH up. What is it here? What? And nobody picked up on what he said? Now, maybe they say, now, you never know. There may have been people there saying, it's Murphy, whatever. But Siri, now, play you the longer version of this. And again, we heard Mr. Eloquent Chris Murphy on ABC, where he knew he had to tone it down. But this is what one of our two representatives in the United States Senate is saying. So it means he's either seen blockbuster evidence that could cause this thing to eventually blow up like nuts and take down the Trump White House, or he's making stuff up.
Clearly, Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring. That is heartbreaking. that the president of the United States was involved in that kind of gross, craven immorality. And it stands to reason that he wouldn't be fighting so hard to spin against this story or bullying Republicans in the House to prevent the release of these files if there wasn't something especially and specifically incriminating in that information.
Now, does he know this? That's what I don't know whether Sam Stein actually asked him. Yeah, this is a follow-up because we only saw an abbreviated clip of this. Does he, and I'm not trying to break his chops here. I'm dead serious. Somebody has got to get to him and say, okay, what is the evidence here? Should he have said this, even if you know? Here's the question here. Even if you know if somebody said to you, hey, here's what's in the files about Trump. Do you do that and start to threaten the stability of the world? Make no mistake. Anything this cataclysmic against the president of the United States, who, despite what his opposition wants to feel, is still the leader of the free world. You may not like that. Okay, well, too bad. That's the way it is. Any president of the United States, at least from a military point of view, is considered the leader of the free world. It just is. Don't give me any of this Hitler crap, this fascism. Just stop. You're embarrassing yourself. All right, please. Stop it. Stop it. You know one of my rules here. We don't throw terms like Hitler-esque and Marxism and fascism around like a handful of Skittles. We just don't do that. So, and again, kudos to our friend Tom Dudzik, who had this up on his Capitol report over the weekend. So there you go. Chris Murphy goes there. He went there. And is anybody in the annals of Herm Edwards, hello? Is it just me? Or is this a bit much to say? You tell me.
Clearly Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring.
What?
That is heartbreaking that the president of the United States was involved in that kind of gross, craven immorality.
Huh?
And it stands to reason that he wouldn't be fighting so hard to spin against this story or bullying Republicans in the House to prevent the release of these files if there wasn't something especially and specifically incriminating in that information.
Well, number one, he's saying to release them now, although that may be a little backhanded trick. We'll get some interpretation on that coming up. But really? Really? And why is it, ask yourself this, or yourselves this too, why don't we ever hear this in the Senate from other people except Chris Murphy? Right? We really don't hear this from other people in the Senate. Does Richard Blumenthal believe this? Does he?
Clearly, Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring.
What? Now, if he was, this would make Watergate look like a few minutes on a slip and slide. I heard this and I said, well, let me see what, you know, I saw the thing posted. I said, let me see what he said. Okay. And then I hear,
clearly Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring. That is heartbreaking.
What? Now, he's not the first person in Congress to actually say this. I think he's the first member of the U.S. Senate to say it. But what did I tell you a couple of weeks ago? And I said, well, is it because they completely flamed out on one of the dumbest, most asinine reasons to shut down the government and get nothing? Are they doing this now because of that. Now, again, we heard this in the House from another Northeastern Democrat, Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, who said this on Morning Joe, to which Joe Scarborough's head, like mine, heard this, and it exploded.
If you are one of the people like him who took advantage of young girls with Jeffrey Epstein, then we're going to sort of make that go away. I mean, fundamentally,
well,
Speaker Johnson...
We don't have evidence that he took advantage of young girls with Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
Yeah.
Just common sense be damned.
Yeah, what? So here you have two sitting members of Congress, Seth Moulton, Democrat of Massachusetts from the House, and Chris Murphy, Democrat senator from Connecticut, say, essentially saying that Trump is a pedophile. And what? Now, what? I don't know. Maybe I'm the crazy one. That's it. I'm crazy to thinking maybe if you say something like that, you should have hard evidence. We have a great opportunity today to talk with CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes joins us. Nancy, good afternoon. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Please explain to me, how do we go, Nancy, from like the Epstein files are a complete setup to, okay, let's release them. I'm confused here, Nancy. What's going on here?
I don't blame you for being confused. You know, as recently as last week, President Trump was saying that Republicans who talked about the Epstein files or who were planning to vote to release the Epstein files were bad or stupid, and that only somebody who was stupid would fall into that trap. And then last night, he sort of did an about-face and said, actually, go ahead and vote to release the files because we have nothing to hide and it's time to move on. Just a few minutes ago in the Oval Office, he explained his new take. He said, we've already given 50,000 pages, according to him. He said he had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein, and he doesn't care who sees the Epstein files, but he does worry that the files are distracting from his policies and his message on affordability. So if releasing the files is what it takes to bring the focus back, then he's fine with it. I think the reality is that the other reason he's now fine with it is because he can see the writing on the wall and the fact that there are going to be a lot of House Republican votes to for this bill tomorrow to force the Department of Justice to release the files.
Yeah.
And so once he realized that, there really sort of wasn't much point in trying to argue the opposite.
Yeah, we shall see. Nancy Cordes, Chief White House Correspondent, CBS News. Nancy, thank you. We appreciate the time. Take care.
You got it.
Thank you. How about that? Nice that Nancy Cordes joined us from CBS News. You see her a lot on the CBS Evening News on the network there, so very nice to be joined by Nancy Cordes. Well, as we continue right here on another edition of Connecticut Today, right here on WICC, joining us right now is a gentlemen, we love to turn to when things get a tad confusing, perhaps, in D.C. Our friend Professor Alan Sanders joins us, former Time Magazine senior reporter and, of course, still Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Professor, it's Paul here in Connecticut. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very good. Always a pleasure to be with you, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And boy, Professor, I got to tell you, I do this for a living 5 days a week, 4 hours a day. You've dealt with this stuff for years. I am so utterly confused as to what's going on with these Jeffrey Epstein files. First, there was a daring by Democrats to release the stuff. The president said no. But now all of a sudden he's saying yes. And I'm wondering, what is going on here? Is this chess or checkers or something I don't understand? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, certainly probably not chess. I don't think the administration is capable of playing chess. But, you know, inconsistency is certainly the currency of the Trump administration. Two things here about what I think could be happening. One is the fact that, of course, Trump saw the handwriting on the wall. It's been there for very obviously for weeks, and he never likes to lose a vote, so he saw that the House vote was going to be against him, and so he tried to get ahead of it. That's the simple explanation, I suppose. But there are other more complex explanations. One is that maybe now he wants to put the onus on Pam Bondi, who has started an investigation of Democrats based on these files, pursuant to the president's order. And Bondi could very easily say that she can't release the files because the ongoing federal investigation requires use of those files, and so they can't be released. So that's a more cynical point of view about that. But the also overwhelming thing, which nobody is really talking about, is why do we even need a House vote? If the president really wants this House vote to release the files, he can just do it himself right now. There's no point in having a House vote if he chooses to release them. So the real question is, why is the president still holding on to these files? Why does he want a House vote, which won't really release the files right away, because you'd then have to have a Senate vote, and presumably the Senate, the president would have veto power over this. So why aren't the files being released right now? Still a question.
Yeah, and you know, Professor, I've had this theory, and I want to run it past you. You might think I'm completely nuts here, but I wonder if this is kind of a version legislatively, shall we say, or with information regarding a theory that you and I are old enough to remember we grew up with, MAD, mutually assured destruction, MAD, meaning, and you know, you and I know this, maybe some people do or do not, the idea is both sides have enough weapons, particularly nuclear weapons, that you never want to go there. And if you go there, one side is not going to win or the other side won't win because the destruction would be too great. Do you think, Professor, there is any sort of a theory here that both sides want to make threats about this, but in the end, you think there would be a kind of an overwhelming squeamishness here that there could be damage on both sides, or at least innuendo? Is that why we've never really seen or heard a full accounting of this, or not? What do you think? Because to me, I wouldn't be surprised if both sides kind of have a wink and a nod here saying, hey, there's bad possible in either direction. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that certainly is possible. Certainly, Epstein had relationships with top Republicans, top Democrats, top business leaders. He was very much an insider, part of that elite group which MAGA people love to rant against. So there's certainly that possibility. But Democrats have been very consistent on wanting this to be released, in part because they believe that it hurts President Trump dramatically, because it's a broken promise, and it goes on the list of other broken promises by the president.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, certainly we've had some release of Democratic names of people who had had contact with Epstein. But being part of a group of people where Epstein sort of hangs around or is part of the group doesn't mean there's any criminality by any of these people. I mean, unfortunately, there is this top tier of powerful people, politicians, business people, media people that hang around each other. We know that. We've seen that over and over again, so it's not surprising that Epstein would be part of that entourage.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been no revelations yet that any of the names that have popped up have involved criminality or involvement in sexual depredations of any kind, you know, with young women.
Professor, it certainly sounds like both sides would love to guilt by association, if, as you say, there's no concrete evidence here. Is that what you think both sides are going for or not?
Well, I just think, you got to sort of take it back. I mean, the MAGA people are upset about this holdup on the release of the files because they believe it's a broken promise, a promise that the president campaigned on and that early on in his administration his allies and aides said would be forthcoming, but it never did come forth. The same thing goes for the Democrats. They say this is a broken promise, and it's part of a whole series of broken promises that the president has made and never come through on, like, lowering prices and ending the war in Ukraine on day one of his presidency. I think this is a political football in many ways, but for the victims, this is not a political football.
Sure.
They really want all these files to be released so that the truth is out about what's in them. They know what happened to them, and they've spoken quite loudly about what happened to them. We don't know whether any descriptions of those events are part of the files, but they believe that it's important to understand what's in there, what the investigators who investigated these matters, found and are in the files, so that the whole thing is out there. There may not be any wrongdoing by anybody except people hanging out together, or, in fact, there may be some wrongdoing. One interesting thing which I think might be worth focusing on a little bit, of course, this is pure speculation, we don't know, Epstein seems to know a lot about Trump, at least from the emails that have been released. He's judged, he's made opinions and judgments about Trump's character, he's made allusions to Trump's activities, and it may be that Mr. Epstein knows something about Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin. Which may be something that the president doesn't want revealed, or knows relationships that Trump has had with other powerful politicians and foreign leaders. So this may be nothing about criminality of any kind, but just simply embarrassing revelations of one kind or another. We just don't know. But clearly the president does not want this release, and he's gone through great lengths for months now to not release them, hold back, delay. And we'll have to see whether this vote in the House actually means anything, because, as I said, if the president really wanted the files released, he could do so on his own right now and not wait for any kind of vote in the House or in the Senate.
Interesting. And, Professor, while we have you here, finally, it's been a few weeks now. What are your thoughts as to how the government shutdown ended? Are you as surprised as some people are, and I am, frankly, that it ended the way it did, granted after Election Day, but are you surprised how it ended and the flack that some of the mainstream Democrats now, Chuck Schumer and company, are getting from the more progressive elements in the party?
Well, yes, I think most Democrats and many people associated with Democrats believe that the shutdown should have continued a little bit more. Ultimately, it had to end. Nobody was going to yield anything. The Republicans were not going to yield. But so shortly after the Democratic win in the elections, many people that this was a cave-in that didn't need to happen that quickly, and that the Democrats could capitalize a little bit more politically on it. But ultimately, of course, you know, for many of these people, the eight Democrats who switched sides, they felt strongly about people not getting food. I mean, that's a horrible thing, and I think the Democrats can certainly campaign on the fact that they faced a Hobson's choice with Donald Trump. One, on one side, higher health care costs for millions of Americans. On the other side, starvation for millions of other Americans. And I think they can campaign hard on pointing out that a choice was made. It may not have pleased everybody, but it was a difficult choice made because the Republican Party and the Republican president forced them to choose between starving people and people needing health care. And that's a terrible choice to ask politicians to make.
And former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, Jersey City, New Jersey. Always good to hear from Professor Alan Sanders. Professor, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care. And we will talk down the road, I'm sure. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Right around this time, most Mondays, we check in with Terry Cowgill from the Connecticut News Junkie. And also, he has a blog at Substack.com. I love this title for his blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm still trying to figure out how to turn off the location services on my phone.
Really? Yeah, it's... It's on a menu there. I found it once.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, if you're really kind of paranoid about this stuff and you turn off the location services on your phone, there's so many things that you can't do. Like, you can't really use the navigation app on your phone, like Google Maps. I think we were using that. You can't really use that without location services, because they don't know where you are. They can't tell you where to go.
And you can't find a gas station, you can't find a McDonald's, you can't find any of that. So what good is it?
Yeah, Exactly. You know, but the thing is, and what I told my own kids, I mean, they're both adults, nearing 30 now.
Yeah.
But I told them, I said, the safest thing to assume is that when you're out in public,
yeah,
you are being videoed.
Sure.
You are being recorded.
Sure.
Right? That's the safest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you can't see a camera anywhere,
yeah,
and you're convinced that there isn't one, you know, mounted on the wall somewhere,
mm-hmm,
at a moment's notice, anyone can take out their phone and start recording you.
Yeah.
So they're basically, we have no privacy anymore. I'm much more concerned about the no privacy vis-a-vis the government.
Yeah.
But that's an entirely different matter.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Terry, a couple things that you are concerned with here, and all, of course, in the news. These Venezuelan drug boats. Now, a lot of people are not happy with when I say this, but I say this, I'm dead serious about this. If these boats are not carrying drugs, I would think there would be a way. Now, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't know. You probably disagree with me that. Mm-hmm. You could let the military know, you could let the U.S. know, you could let the people know, say, hey, this is a fishing boat. Here is the registration number. It is traveling, you know, X, Y, and Z. Please don't blow it up. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I just, Terry, I'm not surprised that 71% of Americans in a recent poll are okay with this. Does that surprise you?
Not really, because, you know, the scourge of drugs has inflicted such tragedy on so many people that we have this visceral reaction, you know, we're going to get those people who are selling drugs. But the problem is with these strikes is that the administration has presented absolutely no evidence that these boats are carrying drugs. That's not to say that they're not carrying drugs, but they've got to show us something, because all these strikes are being done in our name, yours and mine and everyone else's. And I think we're owed also using our money, I might add. But in the whole premise of it, and I believe it's Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, he calls them narco terrorists, right? But that's really kind of a contradiction in terms, because the whole point of terrorism is to make a political point mm-hmm. through violence. But drug dealing is basically just free enterprise. It's you're selling something for a profit, so there's no political motive there. It's simply to sell things. So the whole concept of a narco terrorism is ridiculous, I think. And George Will, you know, one of my favorite columnists of all time.
Yeah,
the man is a genius, and I have really tried in some ways to model my writing after his, because he's crystal clear. But he wrote a great column today in the Washington Post called "Trumpty Dumpty and the Venezuelan Boat Strikes."
Okay, I got to look at that. All right.
Yeah. Oh, it's really great. And but anyway. So he thinks that we are really owed an explanation to this, and all the hyperbole we've heard from the president. Each boat strike presents 25,000 overdose, prevents 25,000 overdose deaths.
Yeah.
But now, if that's true, then so far we've saved 350,000 lives. I don't really think anybody believes that at this point. So, but I think this it presents quite a precedent, and I'm not comfortable with it. I think we're owed a much better explanation. We're not getting it.
Okay, fair enough. You wanted to talk about, and I've had some other people on, Terry, talking about this. The state is apparently now, and I guess they did this in the special session the other day, the state's going to get in what, the hospital business now. Let's chat about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, of course, the state already owns one hospital, and that's John Dempsey Hospital in Farmington.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the teaching hospital for the University of Connecticut Medical School, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a medical school, you have to have a hospital to go along with it. So that's totally, and by the way, Dempsey Hospital loses tens of millions of dollars a year.
Oh, yeah.
That's a different matter. It's a real money loser. But now the state wants to buy, and I think one of the reasons that people at UConn would tell you is John Dempsey Hospital needs greater economy of scale in order to not lose money or to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to buy Waterbury Hospital because Waterbury Hospital is Yale tried to buy it, and they bought to, because they said there was too much debt and the hospitals are in terrible shape. So they backed out, and now UConn is trying to come in and do that. And they also are in talks buying Bristol Hospital and Day-Kimball Hospital, yeah, which is in the eastern part of the state. So, but is this really what the state should be getting in? Does the state really want to be in the hospital business?
Mm.
And this is a lot of money we're talking here, hundreds of millions of dollars. Rob Sampson is a state senator.
Yeah.
You probably know him.
Sure.
He's extremely conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with him on much. But he said, I understand this is a well-intentioned plan,
mm-hmm,
but it also, in my mind, is the single largest state expansion of government since I've been alive. And I think he's absolutely right about that. And I think we need to be wary of the state going into the hospital business. Because, we all say that most of us do, and I assume that most of your listeners do, we don't like socialism. But
yeah.
this is an expansion of socialism is what it is. So we should view it for what it is. That's my view.
All right. Terry Cowgill, check him out. Check out all his columns. First, of course, at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and on substack.com. A lot of great stuff from hundreds of writers at substack.com. So you go to substack.com and you put in red meat for mushy moderates. Hey, Terry, good to chat with you. We will chat with you. Actually, I'll be off next week, so we'll chat with you the week after. Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate that, Terry Cowgill.